Hello and welcome to your GCSE English Language Revision Podcast. I'm so glad you're here because today we're diving into Component 1, one of the most fascinating and rewarding parts of your English language course. I'm going to walk you through everything you need to know, the core concepts, the language frameworks, how to tackle exam questions, and the common mistakes that cost students marks every single year. By the end of this episode, you'll feel genuinely confident about what this component is asking you to do. So, let's start with the big picture. Component 1 is all about how language works in the real world. It's not about novels or poems, it's about understanding how and why people use language the way they do. You'll be looking at real data, written texts, spoken transcripts, and multimodal sources. Your job is to analyse them using the language frameworks and to think critically about how language varies across time, place, and social context. The exam board wants you to think like a linguist, not just what is being said, but how it's being said and why those choices were made. Now, let's get into the core concepts. The foundation of everything in Component 1 is the language frameworks. Think of these as your analytical toolkit, the lenses you use to examine any piece of language data. There are 7 of them, and I want you to know them inside out. First, graphology. This is the visual appearance of a text, the layout, typography, use of images, font choices, spacing. When you look at a text, graphology is literally the first thing you see. Ask yourself, what does the visual design tell us about the audience and purpose? Second, phonology. This is the sound system of language. Phonemes, intonation patterns, rhythms, stress, and prosodic features. This framework is especially important when you're analysing spoken data or transcripts. You'll need to use the phonemic alphabet, so make sure you're familiar with the reference sheet provided in the exam. Third, morphology. This is about word structure, how words are built from roots, prefixes, and suffixes. For example, the word unbelievable breaks down into the prefix un, the root believe, and the suffix able. Morphological analysis helps you understand how new words enter the language and how historical changes in word formation reflect social change. Fourth, syntax. This is sentence structure, clause types, sentence length, word order, and grammatical patterns. A short, simple sentence creates a very different effect from a complex, multi-clause sentence. Examiners love to see candidates comment on syntactic choices with precision. Fifth, lexis. This is vocabulary, the specific words a writer or speaker chooses. Think about register, field-specific terminology, formal versus informal lexis, and connotation. Lexical choices are often the most visible evidence of a writer's purpose and attitude. Sixth, semantics. This is meaning, not just the dictionary definition of words, but their connotations, the way meaning shifts in context, and how figurative language creates layers of meaning. Semantic fields, metaphor, and connotation all live here. And seventh, discourse. This is the big picture. How a whole text is structured, how it achieves cohesion, how it guides the reader from beginning to end. Discourse markers, topic shifts, and the overall organisation of a text are all discourse-level features. Now, here's a really important point. Examiners don't want you to work through the frameworks mechanically, one by one. They want you to select the frameworks that are most relevant to the data in front of you and use them to build a coherent, insightful analysis. Quality over quantity, always. Let's talk about the contextual factors. Mode, field, function, and audience. These are the 4 lenses through which you consider why language choices are made. Mode refers to the channel of communication. Is it written, spoken, or multimodal? A text message sits between written and spoken mode. It has features of both. A formal academic essay is firmly written mode. A casual conversation is spoken mode. Mode shapes everything about how language is used. Field is the subject matter, what the text is about. A medical text will use specialist terminology. A sports commentary will use field-specific lexis. Field influences lexical choices significantly. Function is the purpose, what the text is trying to do. Is it informing, persuading, entertaining, instructing? Most texts have a primary and a secondary function, and the best candidates acknowledge that complexity. And audience. Who is the text aimed at? Age, background, level of expertise, relationship with the writer, all of these shape language choices. A text aimed at experts uses different language from one aimed at a general audience. When you're analysing data in the exam,
always ask yourself, how do mode, field, function, and audience explain the language choices I can see?
Now let's talk about language variation, one of the most intellectually exciting parts of this component. Language is not fixed. It changes over time, across regions, across social groups, and across individuals. Your exam will ask you to analyse data from different time periods, from around 1550 to the present day, and to discuss how and why English has changed. Historical language change is driven by several forces. Social factors include changes in class structure, education, and the role of women in society. Political factors include the influence of empire, colonisation, and standardisation, the push to create a correct form of English. Cultural factors include the influence of other languages through trade, migration, and conquest. And technological factors, from the printing press in the 15th century to social media today, have fundamentally changed how language is produced and consumed. When you're looking at a historical text, apply your frameworks systematically. At the graphological level, look at spelling variation. Before standardisation, writers spelt words as they heard them. At the lexical level, look for archaic vocabulary. False friends, words that look familiar but had different meanings, and loan words from Latin, French, or Norse. At the syntactic level, look for different word order patterns, the use of thou and thee, and different verb endings. At the morphological level, look at how word formation processes have changed. And crucially, don't just describe what you see, evaluate it. What does this feature tell us about the society that produced this text? What attitudes towards language and its users does it reveal? This brings me to a really important skill, critical evaluation of language attitudes. Prescriptivism is the view that there is a correct form of English and that deviations from it are errors. Descriptivism is the view that all varieties of English are equally valid and that the linguist's job is to describe language as it is actually used, not to judge it. The exam will ask you to evaluate these attitudes, to consider whose interests prescriptivism serves, and why descriptive approaches are more linguistically rigorous. Think about attitudes towards regional dialects, towards non-standard grammar, towards the language of young people, towards the influence of American English. These are all live debates, and the exam rewards candidates who can engage with them critically and with nuance. Now, exam tips and common mistakes. This is where marks are won and lost. The single most common mistake I see is vague, imprecise use of terminology. Saying the writer uses interesting language earns nothing. Saying the writer employs a semantic field of violence, with lexical choices such as assault, batter, and crush, which positions the reader to feel the aggressor's power, that earns marks. Be specific. Name the feature, quote it precisely, and explain the effect. The second most common mistake is failing to synthesise. Examiners want to see you drawing on knowledge from across the specification, connecting language variation to historical context, linking mode to audience, relating lexical choices to social attitudes. The highest marks go to candidates who demonstrate synoptic thinking. Third, superficial contextual analysis. Don't just say the audience is young people, so the language is informal. Go further. Why does informality signal solidarity? What does the choice of non-standard grammar communicate about the relationship between writer and reader? What social values does it index? Fourth, not using the phonemic reference sheet. It's there for a reason. If you're analysing spoken data, use the phonemic alphabet to transcribe and discuss sounds precisely. Candidates who use it effectively stand out. Fifth, writing responses that are too short. This is an extended writing component. Examiners expect detailed, developed comparative responses. If you're finishing in 20 minutes, you're not going deep enough. Here are my top tips for maximising your marks. 1. Always read the data carefully before you write anything. Annotate it. Identify features across multiple frameworks. Think about what's most interesting and analytically rich.
2. Plan your response. Even 2 minutes of planning will make your answer more coherent and better structured. 3. Use the Peel framework for every analytical point. Point, evidence, analysis, link. Make your point, embed a precise quotation, analyze the effect in detail, and link back to the question. 4. Be comparative. Whether you're comparing two texts or two time periods, always make explicit comparisons. Use discourse markers like in contrast, similarly, whereas, and by comparison. 5. Write about language attitudes with confidence. You're not just describing what you see, you're evaluating it, arguing a position and supporting it with evidence. That's what gets you into the top mark band.
Right, time for our quickfire recall quiz. I'm going to ask you 7 questions. Pause the podcast after each one and try to answer before I give you the answer. Ready? Let's go. Question 1. Name all 7 language frameworks. The answer is graphology, phonology, morphology, syntax, lexis, semantics, and discourse. Question 2. What does MFFA stand for in contextual analysis? Mode, field, function, and audience. Question 3. What is the difference between prescriptivism and descriptivism? Prescriptivism holds that there is a correct form of English and deviations are errors. Descriptivism holds that all varieties are equally valid and the linguist's role is to describe language as it is used. Question 4. What is a semantic field? A group of words that are related in meaning and belong to the same conceptual area. For example, a semantic field of nature might include bloom, wither, roots, and harvest. Question 5. What does the Peel framework stand for? Point, evidence, analysis, link. Question 6. Give 2 examples of how technology has influenced language change. Possible answers include the printing press, standardized spelling, social media has created new lexics and informal written registers. Digital communication has blurred the boundary between spoken and written mode. The internet has accelerated the spread of American English. Question 7. What is the difference between lexis and semantics? Lexis refers to the vocabulary choices themselves, the actual words selected. Semantics refers to the meaning of those words, including connotation, denotation, and how meaning shifts in context. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back to the relevant section of your notes and review it. Retrieval practice is one of the most powerful revision strategies there is. The act of trying to remember something, even if you get it wrong, strengthens your memory far more than rereading. Now, let's wrap up with our summary. Today, we've covered the 7 language frameworks, your analytical toolkit for any piece of language data. We've explored the contextual factors of mode, field, function, and audience, and how they explain language choices. We've discussed language variation over time, from 1550 to the present day, and the social, political, cultural, and technological forces that drive change. We've looked at language attitudes, prescriptivism versus descriptivism, and why critical evaluation of those attitudes earns you top marks. And we've gone through the most common mistakes and the strategies that will help you avoid them. Here are your 3 golden rules to take away from today. 1. Be specific. Name features precisely. Embed short quotations and always explain the effect. Never just identify a technique. 2. Synthesize. Draw on knowledge from across the specification. The best answers make connections between frameworks, between contexts, between time periods. 3. Evaluate. Don't just describe, argue. Take a position on language attitudes, support it with evidence, and show the examiner that you can think like a linguist.
you've got this. The more you practice applying the frameworks to real data, the more natural it becomes. And remember, every text you encounter in daily life is a piece of language data waiting to be analyzed. Start noticing language everywhere. On packaging, in adverts, in conversations, on social media. That curiosity is what makes a great linguist. Thanks so much for listening. Good luck in your revision, and I'll see you in the next episode. Take care.